summer music festivals.
I think people are in a different mindset in the summer. Everybody's just happier, especially in the Midwest. In the winter, everybody just gets crabby and depressed.
It's hot and sweaty, and you kind of have to like fight a lot of better judgment to come to a lot of these things. You're looking for the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
We made plans for this in February when we first heard about it, and it's like winter is going to end at some point, and then we get to go out and have fun and play.
I'm with my best friends. It's a road trip. It's adventure.
For us, being in Minnesota, it's so cold throughout the winter, so an excuse to literally spend days outside in the sunshine, among the trees, in the grass, listening to fantastic music, there's nothing better.
We're up in northwest Wisconsin at the first ever Eau Claire Music and Arts Festival. It's a big indie gathering organized by Bon Iver's Justin Vernon. 25,000 people biked, drove, and flew in for this. Most of them camped overnight. They've already endured an epic Midwestern thunderstorm. But this morning the sun is out. There's bug spray and free water. The first band is warming up. Chances are something like this may be going on near you too, because summer music festivals are a huge part of the American music scene. They're the famous blockbuster festivals like Coachella and Lollapalooza, but there are hundreds of other smaller ones scattered all around the country. Now, if you're wondering why everyone's so eager to get sunburned and dehydrated listening to music they could hear better with earbuds, music critic Maura Johnston tells Charles Monroe Kane it is not just about the music.
The appeal of a festival is something that goes beyond the bands on its bill. You see the stories about Coachella and Lollapalooza selling out before their lineups are even announced, because they are in large ways excuses for people to gather in particular areas of the country, whether it's the Indio Desert or Chicago or Virginia or what have you.
So, you know, I'm not sure how old you are, but I'm in my 40s and I graduated in the 80s. I graduated from college before there was the first Lollapalooza. There were no festivals, unless I wanted to follow the dead for a while. There was nothing to do like this at all. Why? What happened? Why are there? I mean, there were none when I was. I'm not that old. What happened?
No, totally. I mean, well, and it's funny watching the sort of like, you know, mutation of festivals like Lollapalooza, which used to be a traveling festival back in its early days and is now just in Chicago for one weekend. What's happened is the consolidation of the live music landscape. It was a way for the music business to kind of, really, I think that there was a lot of like bet hedging going on. Because, you know, what happens now with music is it's so much more difficult to cut through the clutter and to introduce a new act, because you have, you know, tons of blogs posting about tons of things. You have tons of websites posting about tons of things. You have people discovering YouTube memes on their own. So this is a way for at least newer bands to be introduced to the fans of, say, a My Morning Jacket or a Modest Mouse in a way that doesn't indicate an entire summer-long commitment for Modest Mouse or My Morning Jacket to be on that tour.
For the millennials, for people coming up and the internet being how they're, you know, weaned on music, they're virtually hanging out. They're listening to music. Yeah. They're virtually talking. And then there's a gathering once a year where they can – the tribe gathers, right?
Right. People who are after college, going out in the world and maybe having to move to a place that's far from their friends, these festivals are a way to gather with their tribes who either they've known in person or, you know, in some context pre-festival, or even to just get to know people who they might not have interacted with in the past. You know, I've been going to Pitchfork off and on for its entire existence. And, you know, I have a group of friends who I really don't see ever because they don't. I live in Boston and they all don't. And they collect in this little area that they've dubbed Lazy Town, you know. And that's like a ritual for me, is like going over when I'm at Pitchfork, I will go over to that area of the park and chill out with my friends in this area, you know. And that's kind of like the summertime thing that I do if I'm in Chicago in that during that time of year.
How big are they? I mean, is this a big part of the music industry now, or is it just a little blip?
It's becoming a bigger part of the music industry. I mean, I've covered music full-time for the past 9 years, and I've definitely seen these kind of rise and fall sine waves. And there have been a lot that have failed. I mean, one of my favorite festivals that I've been to in the past couple of years was actually a big money loser. It was the band Metallica. They hosted a festival in 2012 and 2013 called Orion. It was definitely one of those festivals where you wouldn't expect the bands to be on the bill that were, because it was just, you know, like bands that the members of Metallica were really into. And at one point, Lars Ulrich came out and introduced the band Hot Snakes by telling the crowd that, you know, this was just what he'd been listening to.
You know, I was at a festival in Milwaukee we have here. I think it's the largest festival in the world. I'm in Wisconsin. And I went there and I went to one of the stages, and it was the Cuervo stage, and I hated it. You got drunk girls throwing up. You got aggressive frat boys. You got people just like being jerks about the whole thing.
You know, I think that there is this kind of upswing in, I mean, music has always been about, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, right? But there is kind of this upswing in this hedonistic attitude. I know I sound so old when I say that, but at the same time, it just feels like, you know, when you see some of the novelty tank tops that get worn to Coachella. There was that one where the guy wore a tank top about, like, sexually assaulting women, you know, as a joke.
Right.
And it was like, that's the kind of attitude that bubbles up when the festivals are the most sort of craven and capitalistic and, you know, in this space where it's like, the music is secondary, but we really want to give you the brand experience. That's when you get this kind of nihilism creeping in. Because what happens is, like, the humanity gets erased and the personal connection between musician and audience gets erased.
And it's funny you're talking about that. I was just at a festival, like, only a couple weeks ago at the Eau Claire's Festival. It was very small. It was very intimate. There's a lot of green space. It was very safe. All the artists seemed excited. Everything was really positive. Mm-hmm. There was some magic there. Can those small festivals make? I mean, you got Pitch-a-Thon in Oregon. You got Mysteryland in upstate New York. You all these little, cool festivals. Can they make it?
I think so. I mean, I think that that's going to be one of the defining aspects of the music industry in the coming years, is these smaller operations that don't have to scale to, like, a Lollapalooza size or a Coachella size. I think what's happening, too, is you have this kind of mentality that's definitely accelerated by the internet, where everything has to scale. And I put that in air quotes. And by to scale, I mean to sort of, like, reach every person and reach the biggest audience that it can. And I think it's an unrealistic aspiration, because what happens is, if everything speaks to everybody, then nothing speaks to anybody.
So where does this go? What's the future of summer festivals? Will there be even bigger Coachellas and Lollapaloozas and Bonnaroos, or will there be hundreds and hundreds of small fests all around, you know, with the tribe gathers? Where does all this go?
I think you'll still have the big three tentpole festivals, Coachella, Lollapalooza, Bonnaroo. Coachella might become like a year-round thing. I'm not saying that it's going to, but I mean, it just seems like it could, you know, conceivably expand endlessly. But I do think that what you're going to see is more smaller festivals that are headed up by bands. You had Wilco put on a festival in Western Massachusetts. You have, obviously, Eau Claire. You know, you have even, like, Drake putting on OVO Fest
right in
Toronto. What I think will happen is artists who have the capital to kind of plant a flag and be like, hey, come out and hang out with us for a weekend. And I think that if you are smart about money, and if you put together your lineup in a thoughtful way and also respect the artists and the audience, that's the key.
Maura Johnston is a music critic and editor of Maura magazine. She talked with Charles Monroe Kane.